heads as they looked out at the lake.
I love it,
Maisie told me with a grin. Then it was all worth it. They ran to the other side of the house, and Ella leaned against my back, wrapping her arms around me.
Can I get you alone later?
She asked, her hands skimming under my shirt to run the lines of my abs. Yes, as many times as you can handle. God, I wanted her. Needed to get her under me, over me, around me. Needed to feel connected to her in the way that only sex gave us. The moments when there were no worries, no cancer, no kids underfoot. Just us and the love we had for each other. Before she could answer, my phone rang. I reached between us to my back pocket and pulled it out, swiping to answer. Gentry.
Hey, I know you're not on call this weekend, but we've got some lost hikers.
Mark's voice came through the line. I sighed. All I wanted to do was have dinner with the kids, tuck their smiling faces into bed, and then get very alone with their mother. How lost? They missed their check-in 4 hours ago?
Go,
Ella urged, kissing my arm where skin met shirt.
I know you're needed. Go.
I'll be there in 20.
I hung up the phone and pulled Ella into my arms. I'm so sorry. This is the last thing I want to do right now.
Oh, trust me. You're the only thing I want to do right now,
she said with a kiss on my chin before releasing me.
Stay with me tonight after you're done?
I nodded. We limited sleepovers, but I wasn't arguing. Not tonight. I'll be back as soon as possible. I promise, I told her before kissing the kids on the forehead as they ran by again. Can you get Maisie down?
I've got this. Go,
Ella ordered. I let my eyes roam her body and sighed in a pout. Tourists? She flat out laughed.
Hey, this is normal life. You were the one championing normal, right?
As long as normal means I come home to you tonight, I'm good with it. And I was. Me, the guy who never wanted roots, was all about laying them deep here. This was what I wanted. This life. Ella, Colt, Maisie. Normal. Everyday, ordinary normal. I just needed Maisie to live, because there was no normal without her in it.
6 months later. Chapter 20. Ella.
Letter number 5. Ella. Ah, the dating question. I honestly don't really date. Why? Because my life isn't fair to any woman. We head out at the drop of a hat. And not like, hey, I'm leaving next week. More like, sorry, I won't be home for dinner for the next couple of months. Seems like a crap way to start a relationship when I never know when we'll get home. Take this trip, for example. We figured it would be a couple of months. Definitely not the multiple-stop journey it has been. I couldn't imagine leaving a girl at home to wait through that. So without sounding like a douche, I just prefer not to have long-term relationships. On some level, I'm also not sure I'm capable. When you grow up knowing nothing of a working, good relationship, it's pretty hard to see yourself in one. As for Robbins, if you want to go, go. Don't hide behind your life or your kids. If you're scared to get out there and risk yourself, then say that. Own it. What you went through would make any normal person a little gun-shy, no doubt. No one is going to think less of you. Just don't hide behind excuses. You'll be stronger when you identify what sets you on edge. And honestly, I've seen pictures of you. You're not going to end up as the crazy cat lady, I promise. Am I happy single? I think happiness is a relative term. No matter what the subject. I quit striving for happy when I was about 5. Now I go for content. It's easier to attain and doesn't leave me feeling like there's something missing. Eventually, I'll get out of the military, and then maybe we'll see. But that's a decade or more away. For now, this is the life I love, and I'm content. Goal attained. Tell me a little bit about Telluride. If I came into town as a tourist, what absolutely has to be seen, done, eaten? Chaos.
Content. I'd been looking for the right word to describe my feelings about my blur of a life lately, and that was it. I was content. I loved Beckett with an intensity that was almost frightening. That hadn't changed, and something told me it wouldn't. But I also knew there were things about him I'd never know. Even 7 months as a couple hadn't filled in all the holes of who he had been before he'd shown up at Solitude. Most of the time, he was the Beckett I knew. But there were moments when I caught him staring out at Ryan's Island, or when he woke up from a nightmare, that I couldn't help but wonder if I'd ever know him as well as he knew me. Maybe that was simply what came with the territory when you loved a man like him. I learned a few months into our relationship that love was mostly about compromise, but it was always about acceptance. There were dozens of little things about him that could annoy the socks off me, and the same went for him. But for the most part, we were who we were, and we loved each other. There was no point trying to change each other. We either wanted to grow or change ourselves, or we didn't. After you accepted that about someone and still loved them, you were pretty much indestructible. Beckett had accepted that I was always going to be overprotective of the twins, and that I wasn't anywhere near ready to tell them that he'd adopted them. I'd accepted that there were simply parts of him that would always remain shadowed and secretive. But there was no denying that my choice to keep the adoption under wraps was directly impacted by the moments Beckett distanced himself when I asked about his past. It wasn't that I didn't trust him. He would die for me, for the kids. But until I knew with 100% certainty that he'd stay, that those shadows in his eyes wouldn't lead to me finding his bags packed, the twins couldn't know. God, they loved him, and even the chance that Beckett could destroy their hearts by being the second father to abandon them was too big of a risk to take. Not while Maisie was still fighting for her life. The thought of losing Beckett stuttered my heart, and I reached across the console of the truck to take his hand as he drove us along the familiar roads to Montrose. He lifted my hand and kissed the inside of my wrist, a habit I happened to love, without taking his eyes off the road. Snow rose on either side of us, but at least the roads were clear. February was always an unpredictable month. "You good back there?" I asked Maisie, as she played on the iPad Beckett had gotten her for Christmas. It matched Colt's almost identically, except for the case. "Yep, just working on a spelling game Miss Steen gave me for homework." She didn't look up, just kept swiping away. "Did you bring Colt?" I asked, spotting the pink bear wedged into the seat next to her. "Yeah. He was mad that he couldn't come, so I promised him Colt would come." She met my eyes in the mirror and forced a little smile. "You're nervous." "I'm okay." Beckett and I shared a sideways glance, and we both let it go. She'd been through 33 days of hell a month ago. The mega chemo had been the most vicious part of her treatment. She'd thrown up, her skin had peeled, she'd had sores down her GI tract and had a feeding tube placed because she couldn't keep anything down. But as soon as she'd finished that course of treatment and the stem cells had been transplanted, she bounced right back. She was astonishing on every level that a little girl could be. I couldn't say I was happy, not with Maisie still fighting for her life. But we'd passed the year mark in November, and she was still here. She'd had another birthday, another Christmas. Colt was taking snowboarding lessons. Solitude was booked solid through the ski season and summer, and Haley had moved out a few months ago, knowing I could depend on Beckett, who had taken shifts between Telluride and Denver to be wherever he was needed most. Everything came back to Beckett. He took the worst days and made them bearable, took the good days and made them exquisite. He picked up the kids, took Colt to school, took Maisie to local appointments, made dinner on nights I couldn't get away from the main house. There was nothing he wouldn't do. So maybe I couldn't say that I was happy, but I was content, and that was more than enough. Chaos would have been proud. It had been almost 14 months since I'd lost him and Ryan, and I still had no clue why. That was part of Beckett's past I had a nearly impossible time accepting. Only nearly, because I heard him scream Ryan's name in the middle of a nightmare a few months ago. That scream told me he wasn't anywhere near ready to talk. Ryan and Chaos were gone, Beckett was alive and in my arms. And that meant I had all the time in the world to wait until he was ready. We pulled into the hospital parking lot, and Beckett carried Maisie through the slush-filled lot as I followed in his footsteps, thankful I'd worn boots. Maisie was quiet through check-in and vitals, and dead silent as she had her blood drawn and went through the CT scan. By the time we were put into an exam room to wait for Dr. Hughes, she was almost a statue.
"What are you thinking about?"
Beckett asked her, as she sat on the exam table. She shrugged, kicking her feet under the chair. They'd made a deal after the second MIBG treatment. She wasn't sitting on exam tables any more than necessary. She said they made her feel like she was a sick kid, and she wanted to believe that she was getting better. So Beckett would sit on the table until the doc came in, and then they would trade places.
"Me too,"
he said, mirroring her shrug. "Me three," I added. That earned us a little smile. Dr. Hughes knocked and opened the door. "Hi there, Maisie," she said to Beckett.
"Busted,"
he stage whispered. Maisie grinned and jumped up to take his spot as he took her chair and then my hand. "How are you feeling?" Dr. Hughes asked, doing the usual physical checks. "Good? Strong," she nodded to emphasize her point.
"I believe you. You know why?"
My hand tightened on Beckett's. As steady as I tried to appear to Maisie, I was terrified of what she was going to say. It seemed so unfair to put a little girl through so much and not have it work. "Why?" Maisie whispered, her arms crushing Colt's teddy bear.
"Because your tests look great, just like you, good and strong."
She tapped Maisie on the nose with her finger.
"You are a rock star, Maisie."
Maisie looked back over her shoulder at us, a smile as wide as the state of Colorado. "What exactly does that mean?" I asked.
"We're looking at less than 5% on her bone marrow. No change since you left the hospital last month, and no new tumors. Your girl is stable and in partial remission."
That word tripped something in my brain, and it short-circuited just like it had the first time they'd said cancer. Except this time, it was in the joy end of disbelief.
"Say it again," I begged.
Dr. Hughes smiled.
"She's in partial remission. It means no new treatments for the time being.
I'll probably want to do a session of radiation in a couple months to mop up any of the microscopic cells. But as long as her scans are coming back clean, I think we can give her a little break." Everything went blurry, and Beckett's hands wiped at my cheeks. I laughed when I realized I was crying. We listened to Dr. Hughes explain that it wasn't a full remission. She had made significant progress, but hadn't been cured. She was hopeful that the radiation treatment would wipe out the rest, and then we could schedule immunotherapy. Then she reiterated that over half of all kids with aggressive neuroblastoma relapsed after they'd been declared in full remission. That this wasn't a guarantee, but a much-needed break. Her weekly scans could even be done locally in Telluride, and she'd review them in Denver. No need to drive to Montrose. I wrote down everything I could process in her binder, hoping I could make sense of it all later. Then Maisie hopped down from the table, and we walked to the car. Maisie and Beckett chattered and laughed, joking about how much ice cream she was going to eat while she had a couple of months off treatment. She declared she was going to eat an entire Easter basket full of chocolate and peanut butter cups. Beckett hoisted Maisie into the truck, and she buckled in. Then he shut the door and caught my hand as he walked me to my side of the truck. All at once, it hit me. Maisie had been talking about Easter, which was 2 months away. My vision swam, and I covered my face with my hands.
"Ella,"
Beckett whispered, pulling me against his chest. I gripped the edges of his coat and sobbed, the sound ugly and raw and real.
"Easter. She's going to be here for Easter."
"Yeah, she is,"
he promised, running his hand down my back in sweeping motions.
It's okay to plan, you know, to look ahead to what life will be like for the four of us once she's healthy. It's okay to believe in good things.
I've been stuck for so long, just living scan to scan, chemo to MIBG. We didn't even buy presents until the week before Christmas, because I couldn't see that far into the future. And now I can see a couple of months out.
Sure, there were weekly scans, but a couple of months felt like an eternity, a gift of the one thing we'd been denied, time.
We'll just enjoy it and take advantage of every minute she feels great.
Right, I agreed with a nod. But with the word remission being tossed around like a beach ball at a concert, I felt the gut-wrenching longing for more. I'd always pushed thoughts of Maisie dying to the side, but I also hadn't thought about her living. My world had narrowed to the fight. My infinity existed within the confines of her treatment, never looking too far ahead for fear it took my eyes off the battle of the moment.
I think I'm getting greedy.
Ella, you're the least greedy person I know.
His arms tightened, grounding me. I am, because I've been begging for weeks, and now I see months and I want years. How many other NB kids have died while she fought? 3 from Denver? And here I am seeing this light at the end of the tunnel and praying it's not a freight train coming our way. That's greedy.
Then I'm greedy too, because I'd give up anything for her to have the time, for you to have it.
We headed home with Maisie singing along to Beckett's playlist. Her earlier worries shoved aside for another day and another test. My worries lingered. Wanting something that was so out of reach had been a distant thought. And now that it was a real possibility, that want was a screaming need that shoved everything else aside and demanded to be heard. I didn't just want these few months. I wanted a lifetime. For the first time since Maisie was diagnosed, I had real hope, which meant I had something to lose. 2 weeks later, my back hit the wall in my bedroom, and I barely noticed. My legs were around Beckett's waist, my shirt lost somewhere between the front door and the stairs. His fell somewhere between the stairs and the bedroom. His tongue was in my mouth, my hands were in his hair, and we were on fire.
How long do we have?
He asked, his breath hot against my ear before he trailed kisses down my neck, lingering on the spot that always brought chills to my skin and fever to my blood.
Half hour?
It was a rough guess.
Perfect. I want to hear you scream my name.
He carried me to the bed, and a few seconds and some shedding of clothes later, we were both blissfully naked. We were experts at quiet sex, the kind where mouths and hands covered the sounds of orgasms, where you stole showers or middle-of-the-night sessions to avoid the inevitable kid interruptions. We'd long since moved the bed's headboard off the wall. But having the entire house to ourselves for a half hour, it was an excuse to be downright hedonistic. He moved over me, and I cradled his hips between mine as he kissed me to oblivion. No matter how secretive he might be about his time in the military, he was an open book while we were in bed. Our bodies communicated effortlessly, and we somehow managed to get better at it every time we made love. The fire I'd half expected to fizzle out only burned brighter and hotter.
Beckett, I groaned, when he took a nipple into his mouth and slipped his hand between my thighs.
Always so ready. God, I love you, Ella.
I love you.
Each word was punctuated by a gasp. The man knew exactly how to bring me to the brink with nothing more than a few ring, ring, ring. I forced my head to the side, where I saw Beckett's cell phone illuminated on the floor next to his jeans.
That's you.
I don't care,
he said before he kissed me. Between his tongue and his fingers, I was already arching up to meet him, desperate to make the most of our time alone. These were the moments when nothing else mattered, where the entire universe melted away, and nothing existed outside our bed, our love. Ring, ring, ring. Damn it. I looked again and made out the letters on his screen. It's the station, and if they've called twice... Beckett growled his annoyance, but leaned over the bed to retrieve the phone.
Gentry.
He put his mouth to my belly, and I ran my hands over the broad expanse of his shoulders.
Don't care. Nope.
His tongue trailed back up to the curve of my breast, then abruptly stopped. He sat up on his knees, and I knew before he said a single word that he was leaving, because he was already a million miles away.
I'll be there in 10.
He set the phone down and gave me the look, the one that said he wouldn't go if they didn't need him. It's okay, I told him, already sitting up. He put his hand on my knee.
I wouldn't go if they didn't
need you, I finished for him.
Exactly. There's been a rollover near Bridal Veil Falls, and a 10-year-old girl is missing. She was thrown from the vehicle. It's a kid.
Kids were the one demographic he never turned down. Even if he wasn't on call, if it involved a child, he went in. I leaned forward and kissed him softly. Then you'd better go.
I'm so sorry.
He raked his eyes down my body.
So, so, so sorry.
I know. I love you. Go save someone's little girl. I shooed him out the door with Havoc, and 5 minutes later, I stood fully dressed in my empty bedroom. With an empty house. The options were endless. I could read a book. I could watch something I'd DVR'd months ago. I could even take a bath. Sweet, blissful quiet. Instead, I chose laundry. I'm going to start a nudist colony, I muttered, as I grabbed Maisie's basket and headed down the steps. My phone rang midway, and I did the basket to hip shuffle to get it answered. Hello?
Mrs. Gentry.
As lovely as that sounds, I shut that thought down. No, I'm Miss Mackenzie, but I do know Beckett Gentry. I made my way to the small laundry room and tossed the load in. If we ended up living here after Maisie was cured, then the first thing on my list was to ask Beckett to install a new, bigger washer and dryer. Holy crap. I'd just made plans not only for Maisie to live, but for Beckett to still be with me. Wasn't I just the optimist today?
Miss Mackenzie?
The optimist who had completely ignored the phone for her daydream. I'm here. I'm so sorry. What were you saying? I poured soap in and hit start, then got the heck out of the laundry room so I could hear the woman.
My name is Danielle Wilson. I'm with Tri-Prime.
Her tone was all business. Oh, the insurance company, of course. I'm Maisie Mackenzie's mom. How can I help you?
Man, those dishes needed to be done, too. What the heck had the kids concocted with Ada this afternoon? I'm calling in reference to the letter I sent to Sergeant First Class Gentry's commanding officer, the same one copied to you as well.
She was certainly annoyed.
I thought of the small stack of insurance envelopes on my desk that detailed the paid claims.
I'm so sorry, I actually haven't opened those in a couple of weeks. I'm usually way better about it.
But knowing we had a couple of months off treatments made me feel all reckless about not opening cancer-related mail. I felt like Ross in that episode of Friends, telling the mail that we were on a break.
Then what she said hit home. His commanding officer?
Yes, Captain Donahue. We sent him the letter last week as well, in way of notification.
Beckett was out. He said he was on terminal leave when he got here in April, and it was already the first week of March. I didn't know much about the Army, but I didn't think terminal leave lasted a year. Oh, God. Had he lied to me?
I'd like to schedule a time to come out for a preliminary interview. Next week is available. Say noon on Monday?
I'm sorry, you want to come to Telluride?
That would be best, yes. Does Monday work or would Tuesday be better for you? She wanted to come to Telluride in 2 days.
Monday is fine, but can I ask what this is about? I've never had an insurance company visit before.
What she said next stunned me to silence. It kept me motionless until the kids came home with Ada, then quiet through dinner and baths. My mind went in 1,000 different directions as I got the kids to bed and didn't stop for hours. It was after 10 p.m. when Beckett walked through the door, using the key I'd given him 7 months ago. He was exhausted, with streaks of dirt running down his face. He stripped off his search and rescue jacket, hanging it on the rack by the door, and Havoc stopped by for a little rub before she headed toward her water dish.
"Why don't I have a key to your place?" I asked.
"What?"
He stopped abruptly when he saw me sitting at the dining room table amid the open insurance papers.
"I gave you a key to my place, and you sleep here most nights now. It just seems so symbolic, you know? I let you all the way in, and you keep everything locked up so damn tight. I only get to visit when you open the door."
He sat in the chair around the corner from mine.
"Ella, what's going on?"
"You still have a commanding officer? Donahue?"
The way his expression faded to blank told me that answer. Ryan got the same expression whenever I'd asked him something about the unit.
"Were you going to tell me that you didn't get out?"
He took off his ball cap and pushed his hands through his hair.
"It's a technicality."
"I kind of view being in the military as a pregnant thing. You either are or you aren't. There's no halfway technicality."
The dark, angry doubt I'd kept at bay started to cut through my chest, working its way to my heart.
"Have you been lying to me this whole time? Are you still in? Are you just waiting until I don't need you anymore to go back? Am I still just a mission to you? Ryan's little sister?"
"God, no."
He reached for my hand, but I pulled it back.
"Ella, that's not what's going on here."
"Explain."
"Someone showed up right after I got here asking me to return, and I declined. After what happened, I wasn't really fit for returning anyway. And Havoc might obey you guys, but she won't take working commands from any other handlers."
"Ah, another woman you've ruined for any other man," I said, saluting him with my bottle of water.
"I take that as a compliment."
He leaned over the table, resting his elbows on the dark, polished wood.
"Don't."
"This guy offered me a technicality, to take a temporary disability. It would allow me to keep everything army-wise the same without actually showing up. I could go back whenever I wanted if I just signed a set of papers that started with a 1-year enrollment and could be renewed up to 5.
He completely worked the system, doing whatever he could to give me an easy way back in.
"And you accepted."
I couldn't even look at those eyes. The minute I did, he'd convince me he was staying, when all evidence proved to the contrary.
"I declined."
My eyes shot up to his.
"But the night I realized I could put Maisie and Colt on my insurance, I knew I had to sign it. It was the only way to get them covered at 100%.
"When did you do it?"
"The morning I went to see Jeff. It was exactly 1 day before the offer expired."
"Why didn't you tell me?"
A tiny bit of my suspicion faded.
"Because I knew you hated everything that we did, the lives we led. That you'd see me signing those papers as my getaway car for when I was done playing house here in Telluride. Am I right?"
He leaned back and lifted his eyebrow in question.
"Maybe,"
I admitted.
"Can't blame me, though, can you? Guys like Ryan and you and
chaos.
You all have the constant need for the rush. Ryan told me once that the time he felt most alive was in the middle of a gunfight. That everything in those moments happened in vivid color, and the rest of his life faded a little because of it. Beckett played with the brim of his hat and nodded slowly.
Yeah, that can happen. Once you have that level of adrenaline rushing through your system, that heightened sense of life and death, the normal day-to-day stuff feels like it's just a little below. Like life is the monorail at Disney and combat is the roller coaster. The highs, the dramatic lows, the twists and turns. Except sometimes people die on the coaster, and it makes you feel even luckier to get off, and a hell of a lot guiltier.
Then why wouldn't I expect you to go back to that? If we're the monorail, you've got to be bored, and if you're not, then you're going to be.
Because I love you.
He said it with such incredible certainty, the way someone said the world was round or the oceans were deep. His love was a foregone conclusion.
Because kissing you, making love with you, when we're together, you eclipse all of that. It's not even in the background, it just doesn't exist. Combat never bothered me before because I had nothing to lose. No one loved me, and I cared only about Ryan and Havoc. I couldn't leave you. I couldn't go across the world and worry about you, about the kids. I couldn't go into combat with the same effectiveness because I'd know that if I died, you'd be alone. Get it?
I'm your kryptonite. That didn't sound so flattering.
No. You gave me something to lose. Other married guys, they're okay. But maybe it's because they didn't come from such messed up childhoods. Love for them was the monorail. You were the first person I've ever loved, and the first woman who has ever loved me. You're the roller coaster.
Well, if that didn't just pop a pin into my anger bubble and burst it.
You should have told me. I'm sorry. I should have told you. But we were getting so close back then, and I wanted you so badly that I didn't want to risk it.
He sat up straight and took my hand, looking into my eyes with such an intense expression on his face that chills ran down my spine.
If I ever hide something from you, it's because I'm terrified to risk losing you. That whole roller coaster thing? I've never felt like this. Never had my heart leave my body and belong to someone else. I don't know how to have a relationship, and I'm bound to screw this one up.
I brushed my thumb over the underside of his wrist. You're doing fine. We're doing fine. Come to think of it, this is my longest relationship, too. Just don't keep things from me, okay? I can always deal with the truth. And lies? I swallowed the lump in my throat. Lies are my hard limit. I have to be able to trust you.
And I still did, even though he'd hidden this detail from me. There are things about me that would change the way you look at me.
You don't know that.
I do.
He was so certain. Try me. The muscle in his jaw flexed, and he looked like he just might.
How did you know about my commanding officer?
Or not. Disappointment flooded my stomach. The insurance company called. They're sending someone out on Monday to interview us.
What? Why?
I guess the amount of Maisie's bills tripped some internal alarm with her recent enrollment. They're investigating us for insurance fraud. His eyes closed slowly, and his head rolled back.
That's just fantastic.
Beckett. He pushed back from the table and took his hat, tugging it on.
I think I'm gonna sleep at my place tonight. It's not you, just the rescue, and I need...
Did you find the little girl? I asked, shame lowering my voice, because I hadn't thought to ask before now, too consumed with my own drama.
Yeah. She should make it, but it was close.
I breathed a sigh of relief. Then I'm glad you went in. How different this conversation was from the one we'd had a few hours before when he'd left.
Me too.
stay? Please stay, I asked softly.
I know sometimes you get nightmares after you do rescues. I can handle it. If I wanted any future with this man, I had to prove to him that I wouldn't turn away when he showed the parts he purposely kept hidden. I told you, there's nothing that would make me look at you differently.
I killed a child.
He said it so quietly that I almost didn't hear him. But I knew he wouldn't repeat it even if I asked. So I sat as still as possible and simply watched his face.
It was a bullet ricochet. She was 10. I killed her, and our objective wasn't even at the location we'd had intel for. I killed a child. Still want to sleep next to me?
Yes, I answered quickly, tears prickling at my eyes.
You don't mean that. She had brown hair and light brown eyes. She'd seen us coming and was trying to get her little brother out of the way.
He gripped the back of his chair.
I still hear her mother screaming.
That's why you go for every child rescue, no matter what. He nodded. Maybe it was part of the reason he was so determined to save Maisie, too. It wasn't your fault.
Don't ever say that to me again, he snapped. I pulled that trigger. I knew the risks. I killed that child. Every time you see me with Maisie or with Colt, think about that. And then you decide how much you really want to know about how I've spent the last decade.
My heart broke for him, for that little girl and her mother, for the brother she'd tried to pull out of the way, for the guilt Beckett carried. I wanted to tell him that he couldn't scare me, that I knew who he was down to his soul, and he was a phenomenal man. But the look on his face told me that wasn't an option tonight. He wasn't ready for anyone's absolution. In case no one ever told you, you're worthy of love, of family, of home. Ryan's words from his last letter to Beckett hit me. He was the only person who might have known Beckett better than I did, and I had a feeling that while I knew all the beautiful sides of Beckett, Ryan had known the shadowed ones. I stood and held out my hand, waiting for him to make his decision. After what felt like a lifetime, he took my hand and went upstairs with me. Once he'd showered, and we lay together in the darkness of my bedroom, Beckett pulled me against him, holding my back to his front.
I didn't give you a key because you own the cabin, Ella. I figured you already had one. Maybe I should have told you to use it whenever you wanted, but I guess I thought you knew.
Knew what?
You gave me your key when we reached the point in our relationship where you trusted me. Then I was allowed access to you.
Right.
I had to earn your trust, but you've had mine since day one. You already had a key to me. I know the attic door is a little jammed, but just give it some time.
I turned in his arms, remembering every time he'd asked if he could help me. The day he'd found Colt at his house. The night I'd walked in to read Ryan's letter, and then again the night of the adoption. When he'd first come, I was the one who'd shut him out. I love you.
I know. And I love you,
he told me. Then he spent the next hour showing me with every touch of his hands and kiss from his mouth. Like I said, we were experts at quiet sex. Mind-blowing, earth-shattering, soul-shaping sex.
Chapter 21. Beckett.
Letter number 21. Chaos? It's Christmas. Huh. Have I really become that person so sad and consumed with worry that even writing Christmas somehow looks depressing? It shouldn't be. Maisie is here, and since it's been a week since her last chemo treatment, she's actually perking up. Her hair is completely gone now. It left right after the second chemo treatment, her birthday to be precise. Once it started, she told me to take it all off.
She said it was easier to be sad all at once than a little bit every day. My 6-year-old is incredibly wise. So it's Christmas, and while my kids play with their new toys, I want to concentrate on what's good. First, thank you for the robe. It's so very soft, and I love it. I'd ask where you found it, but that would probably mean telling me things you're not allowed to. I hope your present got there, too. Second, you'll be here soon. I have to admit, I'm way more excited for that than I should be. I feel like I already know you so well, and getting to see you face to face is just that, seeing you. I met you 21 letters ago. How amazing it is to meet someone through their words before their face, to find their mind attractive, and then see if the body follows. Not that I'm judging your body. I'm sure it's great, since you do what you do. I mean, it's fine. Stupid freaking pen. I'm just saying that I have to admit that I'm attracted to who you are as a person. Is that weird? I hope not. More people should meet like this, to really understand a person before they see the outer packaging. And I know it's just been letters, but I have this crazy feeling that you understand me, probably better than anyone here. So get here, Ella.
Behave, I told Havoc when we heard knocking. I opened the front door to find Ella standing there, binder in hand, her face tense. It was Monday and the insurance lady was due in 10 minutes. We'd moved the meeting to my house, hoping to not worry Maisie. Plus, since I was the one on the insurance policy, I was really the one she was investigating. Coffee? I asked as Ella walked in. I'm shaking enough as it is. She slipped out of her coat and hung it on the coat rack, revealing a pair of jeans that her curves fit perfectly, and a blue top that matched her eyes. Damn, she looked good. Healthy. The shadows under her eyes were fading, and her skin had a gorgeous glow to it. I couldn't wait to see how the light warmed her skin through the stained glass window I'd just had installed at the new house, the one I hadn't yet told her I'd been building the last 6 months. That was a secret I was happy to keep. 2 more weeks and it would finally be ready to move into. Then she'd have this cabin back for business and wouldn't feel like I was pressuring her to move in together. The fact that the house was next to Solitude and big enough for everyone was just a perk. Don't worry, we didn't do anything wrong, I promise. This is just a cursory visit. She drove here from Denver, Beckett. Are you sure we don't need Mark? There's nothing cursory about this. It's inconvenient to her and invasive to us. Well, there's that, I said, putting my arms around her. We'll call Mark if we have to, but I honestly think there's nothing to worry about. When the door sounded again, I sighed. Looks like she's early. Yay. I left the warmth of Ella's arms and opened the door to find... Whoa, what are you doing here? The firm set of Donahue's mouth told me it wasn't by choice. I was summoned. Apparently this is easier for security purposes than random visits to our office. He held up air quotes. Come on in. He walked inside, adding his coat to the rack and then pulling up a little short when he saw Ella. Ms. McKenzie, he said with a little nod. You were at Ryan's funeral. Her voice had gone soft. I took her hand. Ella, this is... Captain Donahue, he answered truthfully. I already know the insurance demon told her. Well, it's nice to see you again. I'm sorry I wasn't more personable at Ryan's funeral. I was a little out of sorts. You were grieving. It's understandable. Besides, Chaos told me so much about you that I already felt like I knew you. He couldn't have shocked me more if he'd punched me in the nuts. Chaos. Ella said that name like he was a freaking saint. You know him, right? Same unit. Donahue's eyes flew to mine, and I gave the slightest shake of my head, imperceptible to anyone else but someone who'd worked with me in situations where that movement was life and death, like right now. He instantly gave Ella a reassuring smile. Good guy. Crazy about you, I can say that. This time his glance at me was definitely a little disapproving. Gentry, how about we get some coffee? That was not a suggestion. Sounds good. I'll wait here. I think I see her car pulling in, Ella said, her face almost against the door's glass pane. What the hell are you doing? Donahue asked as I made him a cup of coffee.
what Mac asked.
And she doesn't know?
Nope, and it needs to stay that way. After the machine stopped hissing, I handed him the cup. I knew he liked his coffee like he liked his women, black and strong.
You adopted her kids, and if my spidey senses are right, you're sleeping with her. And she doesn't,
the minute she knows, we're done. You know what happened. She'll kick me out of here so fast I'll get whiplash. How the hell am I going to help her then? I hate it, but this is the way it is. The longer I waited to tell her, the deeper it got, and now we're here.
The door opened and shut, followed by the sound of two pairs of feminine steps headed our way.
Damn it, Kate.
He shook his head.
Gentry.
Well, gentlemen, it's nice to see you're here and ready to start. I'm Danielle Wilson, and you must be Samuel Donahue and Beckett Gentry.
She looked to be in her mid-40s, with a sensible suit and minimal makeup. Her brown hair was pulled into a severe French twist, and a pair of glasses hung from her necklace. My instincts told me she was out for blood. My blood.
Coffee? I offered.
No, thank you. Shall we get started?
We all gathered around the dining room table. Danielle sat at the head, spreading out folders and notebooks like she was prepping to study for finals. Ella sat next to me on one side, her hand firmly tucked in mine, and Donahue took the other side, leaning back in his chair and sipping his coffee. Guy had always had a hell of a poker face. But why would she have summoned him?
Let's get started. Mr. Gentry, would you please tell me how it is that you came to adopt Ms. Mackenzie's children?
She put her glasses on, took out her pen, and braced it above a yellow steno pad. Old school.
I served in a unit with her brother Ryan. He asked in his last letter that I come to Telluride and take care of his sister Ella.
She nodded, writing quickly.
May I see the letter?
No,
Ella answered. That's private and none of your business.
Danielle looked forward, locking her hawk-like eyes onto Ella.
Your daughter was adopted in July and has since cost our company over $1 million in care for a condition that was previously known and immediately treated with a therapy that wasn't approved by your previous provider. Unless you'd like to pay those bills, I suggest you get me the letter.
Oh, this woman was a piece of work.
I arched my hips and took the letter out of my back pocket, sliding it across the table to her.
You can't keep it.
You keep it on you?
She asked, looking over her glasses at me.
I do. When your best friend asks you something like that, you tend to keep it close.
She opened the letter and read it over, then snapped a picture with her phone. I felt violated, like she'd just taken a picture of Ryan's naked soul without his permission.
It's what he would want. He wants his family protected. And so did I.
Interesting. So did the unit sanction this mission?
She asked Donahue.
I'm not sure what unit you're referring to,
he answered with a shrug.
I'm well aware of what you do, Captain Donahue. I followed your paper trail and the deal you made with Mr. Gentry to keep him in that little disability loophole. Did you plan this all out? Keep him on temporary disability so he could pony up the insurance for the little sister here?
Donahue took a sip of his coffee, and I was shocked it didn't ice over. He was that cool.
No. But if that was a benefit of my offer, I'm happy to have helped. Gentry was offered temp disability because I have the power to offer it, and he was unfit to return to duty.
And those reasons were?
She looked up at him.
Above your pay grade. Look, I agreed to come here for the benefit of Ella and Beckett, and I have no problem clearing up whatever issue you think there is, but you don't have the clearance to know, well, almost anything. All that you get to know is that I was authorized to offer him temporary disability in the hopes that he would heal enough to return to active service any time in the next 5 years. Proper paperwork was filed, and he remains eligible for health care. That's it. That's all you get from me.
She adjusted her glasses and set her sights on Ella and me.
So you randomly show up in Telluride to fulfill your dead buddy's letter request and adopt her kids?
Not random, but yes. I fell in love with the kids, just like I did with Ella. When you love someone, you want to protect them. They didn't have a dad in their lives, and I wanted to be that for them.
But you could have simply married Ms. Mackenzie and achieved the same thing, right?
Her gaze flickered between us.
Then that would have been fraud, I said as Ella's hand tightened in mine. That would have given you a case, though if you went after every young girl who tag-chased GIs for benefits, you'd be too busy to show up here.
I don't really believe in marriage, Ella added. What the hell? You don't? Ms. Wilson asked, clearly not believing her. Nope. I was married to Colton Maisie's biological father. He walked out as soon as he knew they were twins, divorced me shortly after. Marrying Beckett would have been absolute fraud when I don't have any faith in that institution. After all, what is it when vows mean nothing and a piece of paper binds your life to someone's as easily as the next one dissolves the bond? It doesn't mean anything, but adoption does. He has an amazing bond with my children and shares just as much of the parenting duties as I do. He takes Maisie to treatments. He takes Colt to soccer and snowboarding. He built a treehouse for them and packs lunches in the morning. Does that sound like fraud to you? An awkward silence descended as Ms. Wilson feigned looking over her notes. None of this made any sense. Sure, Maisie's bills were astronomical, but people adopted kids with high levels of needs every day.
If we're done here, Donahue started.
I'm not satisfied. The tone of her voice, the way she flat out glared at Donahue, made me lean forward and scan the details of her face. This was personal.
How did you know about the unit? I asked. My best guess is she found out from her sister, Cassandra Ramirez.
Donahue stared her down.
Ramirez? He'd gotten out after he'd lost his arm. From what I'd heard from the guys before I left, the transition hadn't been easy. In that regard, Ella was right. Guys like us didn't give up the adrenaline rush without a fight. I had search and rescue. Ramirez didn't.
She swallowed and tapped her pen on the paper a few times before looking up. Yes, I'm Cassie's sister, but that has nothing to do with this investigation.
Bullshit. Sure it does, Donahue said with a shrug. You want justice for what happened to him, for the fact that he had to quit before he was ready, and I couldn't give him the same deal I gave Gentry. Not the money, his medical retirement covered that, but the hope of coming back. That's why you're here. It's not for Maisie or Beckett or Ella, it's for me.
She cleared her throat and stacked up her folders. That has nothing to do with this, at all. And I'm sorry, but unless you can provide me with proof that you had any established relationship with this child before her diagnosis, I'm going to recommend your case be reviewed and that all current treatments are put on hold while we investigate further. You can't do that, Ella snapped. They are his children by law. He cares for them, supports them, and acts as their dad in every single way. Funny, because when I happened to run into Colton earlier at school, he told me he didn't have a dad. And when I asked him about you, he said you were his uncle's best friend and his mom's boyfriend, but never once mentioned being adopted by you. Why would that be?
You spoke to my child without my consent?
Ella flew across the table, and it was all I could do to get my arm around her waist and haul her back down.
Calm down. It certainly wasn't part of my investigation. I happened to go by the school to get a few more facts on when Margaret was pulled from school and the emergency contacts changed for Colton, when I happened to see him.
Liar,
Ella seethed.
You overstepped, I said as calmly as possible. This entire investigation is an overstep, and when we shut you down, you can bet we'll take it higher than you are.
There is a little girl's life at stake,
Ella spoke in an even tone, but her hand had mine in a death grip.
And you only care about getting back at Donahue. I care that the rules are followed, which these men should have no trouble respecting. The truth is that this man adopted the two children of his now girlfriend, one of whom needs millions of dollars in treatments, and you haven't even told the kids they're adopted. It smells really bad. If it turns out a full tri-prime investigation isn't needed, you'll have my full apologies, of course. We're cracking down on fraud this year.
She was on a witch hunt. And even though what we'd done was perfectly legal and in no way fraud, she was going to twist it up and throw us into hell while they investigated. They could pause the payments on Maisie's treatments, scans, the upcoming radiation, all of it. Even though we'd be found innocent of any wrongdoing, it would be tied up long enough for Maisie to feel the ramifications. Unless I could prove that I knew the kids before the diagnosis. A dull roar filled my ears as Ella and Ms. Wilson exchanged words. I'd lose Ella, but I'd known that the moment I showed up in Telluride. The time I'd had with her was a gift that I'd had no right to. Hell, I'd stolen it. She didn't really know the man she was in love with because I hadn't told her. Three things, Three reasons. That's what I use to make decisions now, used to quell my need to jump first and regret later. Ella deserved the truth. Maisie deserved to live. My love for the kids wasn't fraud. Decision made. If you'll wait here a moment, I said above the fray, excusing myself from the table. I took the stairs two at a time and retrieved the box I kept buried under a stack of underwear in my nightstand. Evidence in hand, I came down the stairs slowly. Ella and Ms. Wilson were still arguing, but Donahue turned toward me. He took in the box and my expression.
Are you sure?
He asked quietly.
It's the only way.
He nodded as I walked by him to stand next to Ella. The conversation stopped and all eyes were on me.
I love you. I've always loved you, I told Ella.
I love you too, Beckett,
she responded, her eyebrows drawn together in confusion.
What are you doing?
Kissing her was the first thought in my mind, taking the last second with her so I could memorize everything, but I'd taken enough from her already.
I should have told you, and I know this is about to cost me, you, but I can't let another kid pay for my mistakes, especially not Maisie.
The box made a soft scratching sound as I slid it down the table. Ms. Wilson took it and lifted the square lid.
What exactly am I looking at?
She pulled the evidence of my sin onto the table and Ella gasped.
Why do you have my letters? His letters?
She whispered. I kept my eyes on Ms. Wilson, unable to man up enough to watch the love die in Ella's eyes when she caught on.
You said you needed evidence that I knew the kids before the diagnosis, that I had a relationship with them. You'll find letters in there dating before the diagnosis, as well as pictures drawn by the kids and little notes. I knew the kids, loved them, and loved Ella before Maisie was diagnosed. You have no reason to investigate. If this was just about Maisie's treatments, I wouldn't have adopted Colt, too. The truth is that I wanted to be their dad.
Ms. Wilson sighed, thumbing through the letters.
I'm going to need to step outside and make a call.
She snapped a couple pictures of Ella's letters and the kids' pictures, gathered her notebooks, and walked out the front door.
Ella, I started. Don't. Not one single word. Not yet.
Her knuckles were white, and so were the tips of her fingernails where they dug into her biceps. Donahue sent me a look full of so much sympathy that I nearly crumbled right there. Minutes passed. The only sounds amid the tension in the room were the ticking of the clock and the rending of my heart roaring in my ears, consuming every thought. Would it be enough? Had I just given up everything for nothing? The front door opened and Ms. Wilson walked back in, a faint stain of blush on her cheeks.
It appears I have been mistaken. I'm sorry.
She choked that word out.
To have inconvenienced you. While the situation still remains a very gray area, you didn't do anything that would justify canceling the policy, and my supervisor has decided that the investigation is now complete.
I almost sagged in relief at our win, no matter what it had cost.
Don't sound so disappointed. You get to help the good guys today.
Donahue pushed back from the table.
I'll walk you out.
Ms. Wilson stood, then gave me a forced smile.
My brother-in-law said you were one of the good ones, if that counts for anything. He said you and the dog were perfectly matched, like nothing he'd ever seen. Even your names meant the same damn thing. It was nice to meet you, Mr. Gentry, Ms. McKenzie.
She turned to where Havoc sat at my side.
Havoc, right?
This way, Ms. Wilson, Donahue called out.
He locked eyes with me as she walked toward him. He knew I was about to have my hands full.
That offer stands. You can always come back.
I nodded, and they left, the door shutting with an ominous, echoing sound behind them.
How could you have hidden those from me? Why do you have his letters?
Ella asked, rising from her chair and backing away from me toward the box.
Ella.
She put her hands on either side of her head and shook it.
No. No, no, no. Oh, God. The treehouse. The same lettering on Maisie's diploma. Havoc. It's not a coincidence, is it?
No.
All of my life, I'd been able to compartmentalize, to turn off my emotions. It was how I survived all those years in foster care, how I existed in special ops.
But Ella had changed something in me. She'd opened my heart, and now I couldn't shut the damn thing down. This pain was excruciating, and it was just the beginning.
Say it. I'm not going to believe it unless you say it. Who are you?
My eyes squeezed shut and my throat closed. It was all I could do to draw a breath. But she deserved the truth. And now Maisie was protected. I'd done all I could to honor Ryan's request, and the consequences to my heart didn't matter. I straightened my spine and opened my eyes, taking in the pleading, terrified look in hers. I'm Beckett Gentry. Call sign Chaos.
Chapter 22. Ella. This wasn't happening. I simply refused to believe that any of this was real. But those were my letters on the table, along with the pictures and notes the kids had sent to Chaos. Beckett. I looked again, just to make sure I hadn't lost my mind. Nope, just my heart.
How? Why? You told me he was dead!
The words flew out without any pause for him to explain. Maybe it was because I honestly didn't want to hear it. I didn't want my tiny little glass bubble of contentment to shatter.
I never said that. I told you that knowing what happened to Ryan, to me, was only going to make you hurt worse than you already did.
His hands gripped the back of the chair. Lucky for him, having something to hold on to when I was in free fall.
How? When you're alive?
I shouted.
How could you let me think you were dead? Why would you do that to me? Is this all some kind of joke? God, the things you knew about me when you showed up. Why, Beckett?
Sensing the tension, Havoc got up. But it wasn't Beckett she sat next to. It was me.
It isn't a joke. Never was. I didn't tell you because I knew once you figured out who I was, what had happened, you would throw me out. Deservedly so. And when you inevitably did, I wouldn't be able to help you. I wouldn't be able to do the one thing Ryan asked of me, which was to take care of you.
My brother. All of this was for my brother? Did you sleep with me for him too, just to keep me close, make me fall for you? How much of us was a lie?
No. I fell in love with you way before Ryan died.
Don't! I backed up, needing distance and air. Why was there no air? My chest hurt so badly that the simple act of breathing took concentration.
It's true.
It's not! Because if you'd loved me then, you never would have let me believe you were dead. You wouldn't have left me alone at the worst time in my life and then shown up a few months later as someone else. You lied to me.
By omission, yes, I did. I'm so sorry, Ella. I never wanted to hurt you.
He looked convincingly sincere. But how could he be when he'd been lying to me for 11 months?
I mourned you. I cried, Beckett. Those letters were special to me. You were special to me. Why would you do that?
He stood there silent and stoic, and my disbelief and shock transformed into something darker and more painful than I'd ever imagined.
Tell me why!
Because I'm the one who got Ryan killed.
His roar was guttural and raw, as if the admission had been ripped from him unwillingly. The silence that followed was louder than either of our voices had been. Havoc abandoned me, taking her place at his side. Havoc and Chaos, how very perfect they were for each other.
I don't understand,
I finally managed to say. Beckett bent slightly, rubbing Havoc's head in a way I'd seen him do hundreds of times. It wasn't for her, but to soothe him. She was his working dog and his therapy dog, all in one.
Do you remember when I told you that I killed a child?
Yes. I wasn't likely to forget something like that.
It was on the 27th of December. That intel didn't pan out, and I lost it. You tell yourself that you're the good guy. You're there to stop the terrorists, to give the civilians back the country they deserve, that we're keeping our country safe.
But seeing that little girl die at my hand, it broke something in me. I couldn't stop thinking about her, about what I'd done or what I could have done differently.
He rubbed his hands over his face, but pulled it together. My stupid heart swayed toward him, despite everything he'd done. I'd seen firsthand what those nightmares did to him. The rest of him might be a lie, but I knew this was true.
The next night, new intel came in, and we had orders. Half of the squad was tasked to go, me included, but the thought of putting my hand on my weapon literally made me vomit. I knew I was a danger not only to myself and the mission, but to my brothers. I went to Donahue and pulled myself off the line. I know that sounds simple, but it's not. It's admitting to your brothers that you don't belong with them, that you're broken. Donahue agreed and said I needed a few days of downtime to get my head straight.
That's understandable, I said softly.
Don't do that. Don't pity me. Because when I pulled myself off the line, there was an empty slot, and Ryan took it.
I breathed through the pain like I'd learned to when Mom and Dad died. All I'd wanted since those men showed up at the door was my brother back, but I would have settled for knowing what happened to him. Now that door was cracked open to the truth, and I was torn between longing to know and the clawing need to slam it shut and continue on in ignorance.
He took your place.
Just saying the words sent a torrent of emotion coursing through me. Pride that Ryan had stepped up. Anger that he put himself in harm's way one time too many. Gratitude that Beckett had lived. But the sadness overwhelmed it all. I missed my brother.
He took my place.
Beckett's jaw flexed as he drew a shaky breath,